Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. I want to thank you for joining us today on the show. As always, if you want to check out our previous shows and podcasts, visit our website at voanews.com. Look for Upfront Show. We are also on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and on YouTube. So let's get into today's show. The story of human migration is as old, if not older, than human civilization itself. People have been moving from one region to the next, crossing borders, seas, and oceans for various reasons. In Africa, migration from countries, mainly from sub-Saharan region, has grown exponentially over the years, with thousands of African migrants moving to either Europe or the United States. Now, even though there is no one single factor behind why Africans migrate, there is no doubt that an expanding global economy has much to do with it. In fact, research shows that the share of immigrants in the total population of advanced economies continues to rise, while that of developing countries remains the same. There are obviously many other reasons to explain why people migrate, you know, reasons such as conflicts and climate change and many others that are responsible for the increase of African migrants leaving the continent. But that is a discussion for another day. Now, each immigrant has a unique story about their journey, about the challenges of starting a new life in another country, and many other things that happen along the way. Now, today, we're going to talk about what happens when immigrants resettle into their new countries of residence. And those stories and experiences are captured in a new book by Kenyan writer and educator Marvin Opio, where he highlights some of the challenges faced by African immigrants as they search for their own American dream. The book is titled Stuck Here: African Immigrants Tell Their Stories. And in this book, Marvin interviews African migrants about their experiences living in the U.S. and some of the barriers in reaching their dream. Marvin joins us from California. Marvin, welcome to Upfront. Thank you for joining us. Let me start off by asking you the question regarding the title of this book, Stuck Here. Who is stuck and where are they stuck?
The title, Stuck Here, like you have already seen, it is it's a collection of interviews with the subjects. And as I was talking to the subjects, quite a number of them said the exact same word, I am stuck here. And the second person said, I'm stuck here. And then when the third person said, I'm stuck here, then I said, well, maybe that should be a title for the book.
There was a thread.
Right, yes, it's stuck here. And then I had two editors, professional editors, go through it. And the first one, I gave her three possible titles. Mm. And she said, after reading it, she said, Stuck Here is the most appropriate title.
Mm. Yeah, and the essence of it is captured in the themes.
Right. It captures, of course, a book like this will cover several themes, but Stuck Here covers one of the major themes. Mm. Right. So then I was discussing with the publisher also about the title. And he also picked Stuck Here. He said that was the best title given the circumstances, everything considered.
And what is it that is making them stuck, quote-unquote stuck here? And by here, where is that? Where is the here? Is that a metaphorical here? Is it a physical here? And how do they find themselves in these situations?
Okay. So like I said, they're African immigrants in the United States. Mm. And so they are stuck here in the United States in the physical sense, but also stuck in their circumstances. You find that most people came to go to school initially. And then having come to go to school and return to Africa. And then I'm still here. A labyrinth of socioeconomic issues that cause you to not go back makes people feel like they're stuck here.
So when I first saw the title, I thought that it was
a statement on the economics of these communities that are stuck, that there's no social migration, that the economy is not doing very well, and that we know that immigrant communities have been affected, black communities have been affected, have been hit hard. So I thought that it was more that they are stuck and that there's no social migration and that they're not doing very well. And is there an element of that to it also?
There may be a little bit of an element of that, but in some of the cases, the people have really made it socially and economically, professionally. They're doing very well.
So there's about that, okay.
Mm-hmm. So they're not stuck in this in terms of the socioeconomics, but stuck in terms of the inability to return home.
And how many people were you able to interview for this book, and which countries did they come from?
So I have 18 subjects. They represent just about many of the sub-Saharan African countries, ranging from east to central to west to south Africa. South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Malawi.
How long on average have they been living in the U.S. as immigrants? And does it matter how long they've actually lived in here for them to get that feeling of being stuck? For example, has a person who has been here 5 years feel as stuck as somebody who has been here 10 or 20 years?
Right. Different lengths of time. Some had been here 5, 10 years, others 15, 20, or even more. One had been here since early 1960s, so late 50s, and he tried to go back home and work there for a little bit, but then he was stuck here. He had to come back here, and he got stuck here, not able to return. Yeah.
And having spoken to many of these and having done research on this subject, do you get the feeling, or do you get the sense that there's hope for many of these immigrants to get out of that situation of being stuck? For whatever reason, they feel that they're stuck.
Yes, that is applicable to some of the subjects who are stuck because of, like you're saying, lack of social economic mobility. That can apply to them. But for others who are stuck here for different reasons, and they are making it economically, but for social reasons, they cannot move. So I'll give you an example of somebody who came with little children. And by the time you finish going to school, and the children are also in school. So to uproot them from a good school here, take them back home, and you say, okay, let them finish school first. And when they finish school, somebody gets married and you have grandchildren.
Let's take a quick break. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. And as we take this break, let's listen to some of your voices as we hit the streets of an African city. We put out the question to you. Is there stigma in your country towards people who have had COVID-19?
From the time of realizing that there's an outbreak of COVID, the way the governments have been handling it, they come to get the person with who has tested positive, they come with the army to arrest. We don't expect the community that has experienced such to receive the same person and believe that he has recovered. They take these people as outcasts, actually. So what I think that the whole thing comes from the way the whole pandemic has been handled. That's why. So in Uganda specifically, we have seen communities being chasing away their members who the government claims have recovered. See, because of the way they handle the whole system. I think there should be more profession. If you're telling me that I'm sick and you're claiming that this is a very dangerous disease, why would you come with a gun to again convince me to get to hospital? I would rather think that you, the professions, the medical professions should come and even give first counsel this person before even accepting, but they will just drag you like you're a thief. Okay, so it's wrong.
My name is Peter Harriet Mole. I'm a civil and environmental engineer graduate. I think this is completely an issue of education and awareness. It is important that the population or the people are really educated about this virus, and they know this virus that well, that they don't have to be scared or in fear of those who have recovered. They should know how it's spread, how to keep safe. And when someone is completely tested negative or has recovered, it means they don't have this virus anymore. And if they understand this, I think their fears will be lessened, and then they will not discriminate these people who have recovered from the COVID-19.
Oh, well, the thing is, you know, people are afraid. Like in Uganda, we have this particular thing where people are ignorant. When someone is healed from COVID-19, they always know that someone still has the virus. So it's very hard for someone to do what? To go back into the community, and the community accepts him or her. Yeah, so the solution to this is sensitizing the people about COVID-19. If it's done, it's done. Yeah. That's it.
I'm Shamim, Nalubega, in Kampala, working multi-choice Uganda. In order to avoid this discrimination, we should believe that COVID-19 is curable. And here in Uganda, our immune, that one which prevents the disease, of course we have medicine for COVID-19, so we should get familiar to such people. They should be our brothers and sisters. We should have an understanding mind that COVID-19 is there and we can prevent it. And once you are the victim, you should know that any time you'll be you can be treated and then be free. Yes.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the line with me is Marvin Opio, a teacher in California. His first book, Stuck Here, African Immigrants Tell Their Stories, is a collection of interviews with African immigrants in America. Now, Marvin, how much of these stories also reflect your personal story as an immigrant?
How much of it is my story? Mm. That's a good question, because...
As an immigrant.
Right. It's a story of all immigrants, all of us immigrants. It started with myself, because I had a little child, and we would pass by a professor's house, and his mom, an elderly lady, we called her Grandma Wilson. So Grandma Wilson, we'd go visit her, and that is the grandma that my child knew. So then Grandma Wilson was one day lamenting how this little boy is growing up very far away from his real grandma. And then it struck me, so what am I doing here? And I said, okay, so let me finish up and go back home. And when I finished, the same child was asking me, so daddy, you came here to go to school? Yes. So how come we are going back home? How about us? How are we going to go to school?
Exactly. We are not part of the equation. Not alone at this time.
Right. So yeah. Now it's not about me. It has to be about the family. And my wife also, how come, you know, she also needs to go to school. And then everybody needs to go to school. And by the time they finish school, now you are deeply into your career. That is what causes people to be stuck here. It is a mixture of different socioeconomic issues, sociopolitical. For some people, it's very political and mm-hmm. personal. Yes.
Now, Marvin, I know we're talking about your book, Stuck Here, Immigrants Telling Their Stories. One of the most interesting aspects of one's story, their immigration story, is where they came from. And you come from Kenya. We know that East Africa in Kenya, but also specifically from a place called Kogelo. And I know most Americans who will listen to this interview have had or know of Kogelo. Why don't you tell us about this village, your village of Kogelo? What makes it special? Why should we know about it?
I think it would be better if it comes from you, because some people will start thinking that I'm bragging.
You're bragging by not telling the story. So Kogelo is the hometown of former US President Barack Obama's father, Barack Obama Sr. Do people ever ask you if you're related to Obama?
A number of people have asked me, actually, yes. So when I go home, the elders will tell me, you know, Obama is your brother. And my father and the president's grandfather, my father and the president's father, they were born in the same village of Kogelo. In fact, they share a last name.
Really?
My grandfather is Bulwer Opio. And President Obama's grandfather is Obama Opio.
Oh, and you are Marvin Opio.
Right. So we have that...
That's a very interesting connection there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so we share a great grandfather. I had a letter in my pocket when I first met him. I had a letter in my pocket that I was going to give him to introduce myself. But mm-hmm. You know how it is. People crowded him and I never got to handle the letter.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I did write to him later on. And he was kind enough to write back.
So you are the second most famous export from Kogelo.
I don't know about that.
If there are any others that want to claim that slot, let them come at me. But for now, you are. For your book, what do you want the reader to come away with after reading these stories?
Right. Well, there are two types of readers. There is the African immigrant or the immigrants here generally who can read and identify with the stories, and they could say a few people have told me that is exactly my story. And somebody, you were asking me earlier about the title, somebody has said, you beat me to the title. I should have picked that for the title of my book because that's how I feel, and that's how the people I know feel.
Very catchy.
Right. And so it catches and captures their situation, their experience.
For sure.
There is another type of reader who is the African who is still back home and is thinking of possibly migrating to the United States or to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they should read it and understand that the expectations versus reality are not always in agreement.
Do you think that would change their mind if they were to read it about, you know, wanting to migrate to Western countries?
I don't know if it will change their minds, but it will inform their minds so that if somebody decides to move, they will make informed decisions. But I think as it is, based on my experience and the experiences of some of the characters that I've talked with, many people have made the decision to move without having the full knowledge and, you know, knowing fully what to expect on the other side.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the phone with me from California is Marvin Opio, first-time author. His book is Stuck Here, Immigrants Tell Their Stories. Marvin, after speaking to many of these people for your book, what are some of the most common misconceptions for new immigrants or for people who are planning to migrate to America, whether it's their understanding of the society, how life is here, and how do they overcome them?
The Dollar Tree one. You're familiar with that? Yeah, when I first came here, I met some friends who were from Tanzania, and they were always complaining and saying, people from home are asking me to send them money. And they don't understand that for me to send them that money, I will not sleep. Mm-hmm. That means I have to go work double shift to be able to support myself and also send them money. So that is what one misconception. I think there are people who think that it's easy to get money in America, but it is not. And somebody I think had said that going abroad, you know, that is heaven. It's like you're going to heaven. This is how one of the characters puts it, without giving away too much. I want them to buy the book and read it. one of the subjects told me, when you're back home, you think that America is everything. But when you get here, then you realize that it is not that great.
And as we come to the end of our conversation today, Marvin, first of all, thank you for speaking to us about this book. I recommend people reading it. It's Stark, Immigrants Telling Their Stories. If you want to know the real story of immigrants in America, African immigrants in America, go read Marvin Opio's book. Now, Marvin, let's end off on a more positive note. Are there some things that are being done or these immigrants are doing to not feel stuck, to get out of that feeling of being stuck?
There definitely are things that people could do to not feel stuck here. And I think they are already, good news is that they're already doing them. So in part of my research, I read about the Asian tigers, India, South Korea, and all that, how they developed. They developed by the immigrants, people who had to come to the U.S., got some useful technological knowledge or other knowledge, entrepreneurship and all that, and took it back home and they did their own startups. And you can see how much they have developed in a short time. Our people can do the same, and they're already doing the same. Some people are already doing that. But major problem is differences in the political setup. So if our political leadership does not adjust and change with the times and create an environment that nurtures that kind of developmental strategy, then it will be difficult to make it work. But there are also signs that our governments are changing. We have had in a few countries, we have had some viable elections that brought about change, and there is more democracy. So if our political leadership does not adjust and change with the times and create an environment that nurtures that kind of developmental strategy, then it will be difficult to make it work. But there are also signs that our governments are changing. We have had in a few countries, we have had some viable elections that brought about change, and there is more democracy, freedom of speech. So that gives me hope that things are changing for the better. We'll get there eventually.
That is Marvin Opio speaking to us from California. Let's take a quick break, and as we do, listening to your opinions and perspectives on women's rights in Africa. See, March 8th is International Women's Day. It is a day that is celebrated globally as a way to acknowledge the cultural, political, and socioeconomic achievement of women. But it's also a day to think deeper on issues such as gender equality, reproductive rights, and violence against women. So, what's your take on this?
Yes, women of today are struggling, but I think you wouldn't compare their struggles to those of the past. I would say technology has exposed the world to so many things. Let's just look at education. For a woman to make it even in university, she needs a lot of effort. For the women of the past, education was not a priority. Marriage was a priority at that time.
Meanwhile, the world has changed. Everything has changed. we are in a modern world. In the past, we didn't have an internet. In the past, people did not observe some human rights. And this time around, the women have been recognized in as far as human rights is concerned.
And in the past, because women were not empowered, men were abusing them in so many ways. We're not considered as important as men. But now, many girls are educated.
Most of women in Malawi, they are still not employed because we still have this gender gap in our country whereby some women are not considered as material for professional jobs. That's a very big challenge. On that one, I'd say women are suffering because they would look for a job for almost 6 months and then they just get tired and leave it.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The current global pandemic has affected education in Africa as elsewhere in the world, with school closures and lockdowns having an impact on millions of students around the continent. And we have often heard from the students themselves on how this has been a difficult period. But what about the teachers? Our guest today, Marvin Opia, also happens to be a teacher in California. I asked him how the pandemic has affected him as an educator who had to change how he interacted with his students.
It's difficult. As teachers, you get used to interacting with kids and with fellow teachers and all that. It's a collaborative thing. They say every good teacher has stolen from another teacher. Mm-hmm. We borrow from each other, so collaboration is a big thing. And then with the kids being present there, that is when you really feel like you're doing your work. But now when they are not there, it's a little bit challenging. I've not reached the point where I feel like, okay, I need to quit. But if I were to do it another year, I think it probably would be very, very challenging.
So let me ask you this. Do you feel that you're doing more work now because of the pandemic and how you have to teach and using all these different platforms?
Yes and no. No, because I don't have to drive to work. So that saves me some time. I can probably sleep in for another 15 minutes. Yes, and I'm just working here. Instead of filling my car four times a month or five times a month, I fill it maybe once in 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Cost saving.
But on the other hand, the kids are not there in person. I'm not there in person for them to ask me questions. So they send a lot of emails, and answering the emails alone can bog you down. There's a lot of emails. If you just don't answer in the same day, then tomorrow it will be too much. That is one. The second part of it is if I am going to work, I would go at a certain time and leave at a certain time. But right now, the work is with me here all the time. I don't leave. I just keep working without realizing it. I keep working late into the night.
And with that, we come to the end of our show. I want to thank you for tuning in. Many thanks to Mr. Marvin Opio, author of the new book, Stuck Here, African Immigrants Tell Their Stories. Let's connect again right here and on our social media platforms, Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. As the Somali proverb says, wisdom does not come overnight. Goodbye, Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.